You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the School of Influence podcast. My name is Neil Schaefer. Before I introduce my partner, Amanda Russell, just a brief introduction. We have another amazing interview lined up for today with another business leader, business influencer, who is going to, I'm sure, educate us a lot on the many things in which we can do in our businesses to not only yield more influence, but to make them successful. So Amanda, I hand the mic over to you for today's introduction.
Thank you. I am very excited. This is doing a podcast is kind of like a mini reunion in life. I sought out Mark Rampola to do this podcast because I remember meeting him thinking he was one of the most engaging, charismatic leaders that I had encountered. And I met him back when he had founded Zico Coconut Water and then learned that he's now a part founding partner of Power Plant Ventures, which is talk about continuing to be an industry like beginner or start creating new industries. I feel like it's a venture fund that funds plant-centric products, I guess. And he's also an author of High Hanging Fruit. And I also read that you're now the CEO of Beanfield Snacks. So I between all of these things, I don't even know where to begin, but I'd love to welcome you to the show and tell us a little bit about Power Plant Ventures and what you're doing now.
Sure. Well, thanks, Amanda. It is great to connect with you too. It's been way too long, but yeah, I vividly remember you took a leap on us when we were a little company and really helped us spread our word and influence. So I owe you to this date. So I'm glad to repay the favor. But, you know, my story in a nutshell, I guess, is I founded Zico 2004 and ran that for 9 years and then sold that to Coca-Cola at the end of 2013 and then became a pretty active angel investor, all in better for you food, beverage products, predominantly health and wellness, some social impact, some alternative energy, all broadly under the realm of sustainability. But one of the things I realized is I dove deeper into the environmental arena, which is an area of passion and frankly, deep concern for me around climate change. I began to understand how influential our food choices are and how in many ways, negatively, our food system is impacting the climate. And so I also began to realize there was a massive economic opportunity because consumers were looking for healthier, better for you products, which by and large tend to be plant-based. And so, yeah, I sort of believe that there was a convergence of those themes and along with some partners founded Power Plant Ventures. And so we invest exclusively in food, beverage, food service, food tech companies that are building what we believe are sort of the next generation healthy, sustainable brands to hopefully build a healthy, sustainable future for everyone. And so we had the good fortune to invest in the likes of Beyond Meat, Thrive Market, Appeal Sciences, Ripple Milk, and Beanfields. And Beanfields is a company I ran for a little while just to kind of help it get its back on its feet after we bought control of it. But there's now a CEO running that. So generally speaking, I do not, in fact, as a rule, I do not run these companies anymore. We have better CEOs, better founders, better teams than I ever was or could be, but we help them, support them, and do everything we can to help them achieve their mission of building, you know, great brands that are good for people and good for the planet.
So I'm curious, because when you look at Zico Coconut Water, it was like the first in its category, like it was like new category, really. And then Power Plant Ventures is also sort of new category, because if I'm not mistaken, like some of the products like Veggie Grill or like, you know, the plant-based meat are being marketed very differently than anything else in the category. Do you intend to go out and create new categories or like make a change using something totally different? Or is that just kind of like you kind of fell into it? Because that it's like trying to explain, like, you know, chewing gum to someone that's never can imagine, right? That example that I've heard before. And that's kind of what you're doing in these new categories. I mean, I think just the idea of trying to package water, coconut water, and price it higher than normal water, and then trying to put plant-based burgers not in the veggie aisle is like mind confusing. Was that your goal?
Look, what I would say is I think I don't have any big plan or any big master goal. You know, I've been so fortunate to be able to live my life and sort of take it day by day and try to be where I am and see what I'm interested, see where my attention is drawn, and try to get myself into sort of an interesting flow is what I would call it in a way. Yeah, but they are related. In fact, I've been reflecting quite a bit on that lately because, yeah, look, on the one hand, we were early with Zico, but yet, yeah, coconut water has been around for a couple thousand years, right? And it's been used and loved and drank all over the world. We just sort of made it more accessible and available. And that to me was not so much coconut water was really the vehicle. The objective was, frankly, bring health and wellness to more people's attention and bring sustainability to more people's attention, and to try to align the two. That if you're the choices you make for, you know, food and beverage, in that case, a beverage, could be a healthy choice and one that's sustainable as well. And, you know, plus or minus a lot of challenges and issues associated with all those. There's no perfect health. There's no perfect sustainability, but that was the objective. And Power Plant became very much the same way. And really, like I mentioned, was fundamentally for me about a realization that the more I read, the more experts I spoke to, I understood our climate situation is for real. Like, we've got a real problem. And when I realized that the industry I was involved in and the choices I made have a direct effect on that, I realized if I can align how I spend my time, talent, and treasure, how I earn my living with these bigger goals, you know, then I get to wake up every morning and feel like I'm doing something interesting in life.
That's interesting. I don't know what you think about this or if you've thought about the connection. Do you think that the connection between like business for change, for impact, for the greater good, and doing well as a business are connected?
I do. I mean, look, I'll be the first to admit I've got plenty of friends that have made a ton of money, you know, providing a product or service that's, you know, really irrelevant to, you know, the well-being of people or planet, but they made a ton of money. And I also have some friends that really have attempted to address social issues. I've started social entrepreneurship businesses, got frustrated and decided they're going to make a ton of money somewhere else and come back and give it all away to solve the problem, right? So I don't pass judgment on anyone's choices they make. But I do believe, in fact, I know it is possible to get them aligned. So you mentioned Beyond Meat. You know, there's an entrepreneur, Ethan Brown. I don't take credit for the fact that they had the brilliant insight to, you know, put that product right next to meat. That was Ethan and his team. But Ethan set out with objective from the beginning, and his mission was really to get animals out of the supply chain. He's an animal lover. To him, it was ridiculous that we're, you know, using them for food at all. But he's an entrepreneur, a smart guy, very disciplined. He's an athlete, you know, hangs out with and, you know, spent a lot of time with very competitive athletes. And so he realized, hey, you know, people have been, you know, doing veggie burgers, and there's been a vegan community for God knows how long, right? For decades, if not longer. Actually, if you go back to India, it's a life choice people have been making for a long time. He wanted to make it mainstream, right? And take it. Crack this code on how do you get it into out of the niche into the mainstream. And so he figured out a way to make a massive, massive impact. I can't overestimate the impact that plant-based meat can have on our carbon emissions in this world. And he's going to make a ton of money. His company's worth $8 billion right now. And he owns, wow, still owns a great chunk of it, right? But this was always about a mission for him. And that is all we back. We have four unicorns in our portfolio right now, $4 billion valuation companies or more. Beyond Meat, it's one of them at $8 billion. Probably combined, just in our little portfolio alone, there's probably, I haven't even added it up, there's probably $20, $30 billion worth of value created by mission-driven entrepreneurs, passionate, focused entrepreneurs that are trying to make the world a better place.
So I have to ask this then, because this is something that everybody thinks about in terms of being an entrepreneur or business, is what is it about those successful? Do you see a commonality? Because there's a lot of great mission-driven ideas and businesses that don't get the leverage, don't get, and like, what is their dream? Their dream is to get funded by a firm like you, especially someone that's strategic in that space. But what is it that you see that you take a chance on?
Yeah, great question. And so, look, what I would say is I can give you a little bit of a list that we use top to bottom on what we look for, but I'll give you one overarching principle. First of all, we do not invest in anything other than, you know, purpose-driven, you know, entrepreneurs, but they are not missionaries, right? They're not out trying to make the world a better place and we're just going to go about our business. And they are hardcore, and they're also not purely mercenaries that will do anything for a buck, right? They're good people that have a vision, and they are basically about making that impact, but they're also realist about, they live in this world, they walk on this earth, they deal with people. And so they've got to deal with investors and employees and financial returns and all those stuff. They just figure out how to get it aligned. So ultimately, what we look for is top to bottom alignment. It's a founder that has a big vision, but also has proven that they are willing to run through walls to get there. They can attract great talent around them. And we'll get to that on the influencer side, but it's employees, it's investors, it's influences around them. They have a very clear differentiated strategy in the marketplace, product market fit, differentiation, ideally some sort of intellectual property or something unique, but at least a specific brand and product that resonates with the audience. And for us, it's traction. They can point the numbers and say, this is where we were, this is where we are now, and this is where we're going. And they are very disciplined and methodical. So when you look top to the bottom, you can see, okay, I can see how this business is going to grow. I see how it can make money. I see how it can either create value for, you know, shareholders, an exit, an IPO, whatever it is. And so that's rare. Look, we look at 1,000 deals a year just in food, beverage, food service, food tech, and we'll invest in 4 at best, maybe 4.
Wow.
But they're out there. And what I generally encourage, you know, entrepreneurs is, look, you know, whether you get funded by us or other you know, VCs or private equity funds or whatever it is, if it's really that important to you and you're willing to dedicate your life to it, frankly, regardless of whether you might make money at it or not, ironically, that's the biggest chance you have at success is when you have non-attachment to the outcome, when you are so focused on your dream and vision that it almost doesn't matter.
Is that some of the stuff that you applied, like, or what have you taken from doing that yourself, from like building Zico? What have you taken and applied to PowerPlant?
Oh, great question. Look, you know, for some reason, what that made me think of is, look, I also don't want to misrepresent, right? We live an extraordinarily comfortable life, and particularly in this day and age, you know, I understand the privileges of financial success. But I am not lying when I say I'm no happier now than I was making $200 a month as a Peace Corps volunteer.
Interesting.
And so I feel really fortunate that somewhere along the road, I sort of dissociated, understood the risks of too much association between money and happiness. And so when I went into, you know, starting PowerPlant, we believed, and particularly my partners and I, we spent a lot of time making sure we were aligned. How do we define success? What does this mean to us personally? Tell us, you know, understand each other's families and where we are in life stage and what, how we will define success. So we spent as much time on the personal as we did the business. We looked at the business landscape, the competitive landscape, competitive investors, you know, mission-driven investors, tech VC investors coming into this space, all the industry dynamics. And we spent that much time personally. Where do we want to be? What's going on with us? What matters to us? And with the concept being, if we can get the right alignment for us and still think that there's a business opportunity there, it's going to work. And look, it's been 5 years since we started PowerPlant. And for 4 years of that, I didn't make any money. And it's probably going to be still a couple years until that really starts to play out. But that's okay. I love what I'm doing. We've figured it out. And that the money, you know, do great work and the rest will take care of itself is my philosophy.
It's so interesting because one of the things that, you know, Neil and I connected over was, you know, this idea we think of influencer marketing in a little bit of a different way. And that's really kind of the future of business, which is about relationships. And, you know, it's not so much about partnering with social media star, but it's about developing these like long-term relationships with others that have the strengths or the qualities or the resources or assets that's going to help you scale. And to me, that's, you know, what you're talking about now is finding business partners that are, that you've invested the time and these things take, they take time. And that oftentimes in the beginning, you don't necessarily see what that connection is going to be, or it doesn't even make sense at the beginning. And you won't know until you get to know them much better further down the road and all the intangibles that can't happen on a piece of paper right in the beginning when you meet someone. So I just found that fascinating as you're talking about, you spent time getting to know the, like something that is overlooked, the time up front to get to know people. Like we spend so much time, right, on other things, but like not the people that you're going to be like putting your like most majority of your time into.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let me, I'll give you a few more thoughts. You're spot on with that. And one of the hidden gems of this whole mission-driven businesses, believe it or not, is what it unlocks for influencers. And I'll come back to that. But look, on the relationship front, I was always pretty good at it. And I think I did a pretty good job with Zico. But to be fair, I didn't appreciate it. I didn't understand until now, or let's say in the last 5 or 7 years since I sold Zico, how important some of those relationships are. And frankly, beyond the business success, but just in life to have those relationships. But I'll tell you, the practical side of it is the vast majority of our investors for our fund came from early Zico investors and early Veggie Grill investors. And my co-founders founded Veggie Grill. So that allowed us to go on this journey. 100%, the relationships I built over the course of Zico have and are determining our success, my success in PowerPlant. Because the first thing an entrepreneur does, you know, we're working with the kind of entrepreneurs that they're vetting us as much as we're vetting them, right? So they're doing their due diligence. They're calling around. They're checking in on us. And they're calling early Zico investors, employees, distributors, influencers, other people. Hey, tell me about Rampolo. Is he a decent guy? How was he to work with? And so there's a direct correlation. Many of the same distributors and influencers and brokers and lawyers and things that we use during Zico, I'm using today or our companies are using today. So, and frankly, those have now become some of my best friends in my life. And that's something I was one of these guys, I worked really hard to protect my personal life. And I'm glad I did that. But I sort of undervalued what these relationships could mean to me personally. And now I spend time with, you know, not just business partners, of course, but also with our founders. You know, we're taking trips, we're spending time together. I hope I get to, you know, babysit their kids, you know, and that's the kind of relationships I want to have.
I love that. That's one of the, you know, not to do the talking, but that was one of the things that I remember a lot about working with Zico. And I was starting business school at the time.
Yeah.
And I learned so much. And I actually tell, you're a case study in so many. Almost every student that's ever had me, I think, will tell you that I talk about that because I was so new, you know, it was new to be sort of like an ambassador, whatever you want to call it. But I remember so much of the value came from the intangibles, which is stuff that's really hard to quantify on a piece of paper. And what is the biggest problem, challenge in marketing is how do you prove ROI or how do you prove investment on that it's worth it? And you know, I came up with a different model because, you know, looking back on something like that, that so many of the greatest benefits, you could not have wrapped a number around them and only happened greater down the road in a relationship.
Yeah.
Not up front.
Let me tell you, Amanda, I remember that vividly. And so as I'm working my way through reading your book right now, and it's reminding me, it's wonderful because it sort of codifies some of the things I've learned and picked up and maybe understood intuitively, but never really understood sort of the formula. And I think you've done a beautiful job of that. But let me tell you what was going on behind the scenes.
Oh, boy.
Because, believe it or not, you were the unwilling receiver of your, what you're writing about. Okay. I'll tell you a little story and then come back to you. So we started Zico in 2004. And in 2007, I had a conversation with a senior Coca-Cola executive. And his comment was, Mark, you're not going to believe this. We did research across 100 brands, not just beverage brands, leading consumer brands in the country that were cool and up and coming and influential, regardless of their size, nationwide. And guess what came up as in one of the top 10 brands? And I said, Zico. And he said, sure, but can you believe that? And I said, it's so small. How is that possible? And I said, Scott, let me ask you. New York was an important part of this study because you realize New York, at least then and still to this day, is a very influential location. A lot of influencers there. A lot of brands are built there. So your study was biased to New York. And he said, yep. And I said, a little bit in LA, a little bit in San Francisco. And he said, yeah. And you probably anchored a lot of that on Whole Foods shoppers, right? Figuring they're influencer consumers, they're on the cutting edge. And he's like, yeah. And let me guess, you probably looked at some on-trend sort of sports and activities, you know, yoga, cycling, endurance sports. And he said, yep. And I said, Scott, that's our audience. And the reason they're our audience is for the same reason you think they're influencers and are studying is the reason we went after them, right? And so that was very much by design. And part of the design was, and frankly, to attract someone like you, Amanda, because that was the goal. My whole team knew we want to find young, up-and-coming people that are going to be leaders in their fields and create a brand and a community and an environment that makes them want to be a part of it, to be fair, so we don't have to spend a ton of money on it, right? Like, we couldn't afford you today, but we could back then because we had to bring a lot more to the table than just money. So, you know, your strategy worked.
It was we worked on dual sides. No, I love it. Yeah. It's given me a lot of content.
And I will never forget. I remember the conversations with my head of marketing back then, Bill, you know.
Oh, Bill.
She's fantastic. Like, she's absolutely the kind of person, you know, we want to get involved. We knew you were heading somewhere, you know, amazing in your career. And so it worked out. It worked out perfect.
Thank you. Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Bill was a good guy. He was now in marketing. I was so admired him because he was a CMO and you know, here I am in business school doing marketing. And I'm like, oh, that's a dream job, CMO.
Yeah.
So very cool. Neil, did you have a question as well? But before I dominated the conversation.
No. It's been awesome. I've just been absorbing everything. And I love that. I mean, there's a case study to be written there. If you really want to attract influencers, create the product and the experience and develop the community that will attract them.
And let me get on top of that, Neil. So the product, the experience, and the mission. Hmm. Because what we've found, if you look across, I'll give you a prime example. Thrive Market is an online marketplace. You know, healthy food, accessible prices, they are exploding. They launched with influencers, a very sophisticated influencer program. And one of the main reasons that worked is core to the DNA of Gunnar Lovelace and Nick Green, the co-founder, was to democratize access to healthy food. And so they set out of the gate, we are going to bring our prices down to make this more accessible. At least we can try to reach, you know, Target families, if not Walmart families versus just Whole Foods families. They set up a give program for every membership they sold. They gave one away to low-income families or vets or first responders. And that whole mission allowed them to attract some of the most amazing influencers, because what we're learning is angel investors, influencers, you know, our millennials, strategic investors, everybody wants to be part of a mission. Everyone wants to go, take me to the moon, take me to, you know, somewhere amazing. Tell me how I'm helping people. Give me a story I can tell my kids and, you know, over a beer, over a glass of wine or in my yoga class, right? And so I think the brands of the future are ones that will understand that, make it genuine top to bottom. And I think that's one of the best ways to attract influencers is they get to be part of a mission.
I wonder, would you agree with this? I would argue that Power Plant is an influencer, like in so many ways. I mean, an investor is a massive influencer. If people look at influencer marketing, and it makes me crazy. They think of the traditional, like, you know, social media star, but that doesn't equate to influence. Whereas if you're looking at who the forces are that are going to shape and scale your company, I mean, not only are you guys investors, but you're very strategic, heavily involved investors.
Absolutely. Let me look, you nailed it. It's a different way of thinking about it. It's thinking about not who's going to tweet for you tomorrow, right?
Right.
But how are you creating an ecosystem that can support you for your life? And I hope you have a massive audience, but I also don't, because I'm gonna share something that could bite me in the rear here. But I'll tell you, the entrepreneurs I know are winners, are ones that they'll reach out to me, probably send product, even if I haven't asked for it, in a beautifully presented way. They'll know something about me. And they reach out and just say, look, you know, they know we're probably too early for us. You know, we're probably too early for PowerPlan. We know this isn't quite right, but I would just love to get 5 minutes to tell you a little bit about my story and where I'm going and how I'm trying to change the world.
I love that. And you just gave me fuel in this time of uncertainty where every business school student is like, so what should we do to get time with people that we want to work for? And we can't ask, you know, they don't have no jobs. And I'm like, don't ask for a job.
Don't ask for a job. Offer help. First of all, go old school. Handwritten letters, you know, something nice physically delivered. And I'll tell you, this is, you know, I don't want to get into any, you know, legal challenges anywhere, but you know, free work, right? Like, so yeah. I can't tell you how many people, if somebody comes and they want to get paid as a college student, I'm sorry, we have a line, we have 50 people, top MBAs at any one time want to work for us for free. And so what we'll do is give them projects. And what I would do if I was at it, this is what I advise, you know, college age kids today, is spend your time on coming up with a project that you think you can help a company, right?
I like that.
An analysis. You got access to data in your colleges. You got access to professors. At least tease them with some insight you might have, like, hey, Mark, let me tell you what's happening in colleges in at least these 10 schools in the food service system around plant-based foods, right? I've talked to the food service directors. I've taken an interview with some students. I've talked to a couple other students. I've got some information. I'd love to share it with you and your team.
That's fantastic.
What do you think? I'm like, everybody's paranoid that they're missing something. Like, tell me something and then offer up, hey, you know, can I do a project for you? I don't need to be paid anything. I just want to do the work, get some experience, put it on my resume. You know, you don't have to spend 50 hours on it, but you can spend some time on it. But I'll tell you, we now do this with full-time professionals. We will, before we hire someone for our companies, sometimes these are paid, sometimes they're not. I can tell you right now, you will be, Amanda, probably, you may be one of the first to know we got something very interesting cooking. I can't release it today, but it'll be very interesting in the context of this conversation. But real time, I have a potential CEO and CFO working for us for free. And the proposal is come back to us with a plan. If we like the plan, we're going to hire you to run the company.
I love that. You're like a first mover in influencer marketing done right.
Yeah.
No, I just wrote that down because I've actually told many students this. Is just don't ask for time. Don't ask to pick their brain. Don't ask for a job. Tell them you'll work for free for a little bit. But this is even better if you've got that many people offering to work for free. Switching gears a little bit, one thing that a lot of leaders that we have interviewed have said is a common theme between successful entrepreneurs is optimism. Hmm. And I thought that was ironic because you are, I mean, I got that from, you know, 7 seconds when I first met you, is that you're a very optimistic person.
Yeah.
And do you think that that is innate or is it something that you strategically consistently work on?
Wow, that's a great question. I would likely agree with you on that as a common characteristic. I would say that, yeah, I don't think any of our entrepreneurs are by nature, you know, fundamentally pessimists. Look, I do think that I'd probably geared that way, right? And I have a lot of empathy for people that aren't. And I know some people that really struggle seeing the bright side. They just get trapped in this pessimistic view of the world. And that must be really hard. I'm not a psychologist or psychoanalyst to sort of recommend what to do, but I do know there are ways that people work through those things. What I'll tell you is, though, I love when people are, I would say, by nature, hopeful and optimistic, but also self-aware, critical, and pragmatic, right? Because blind optimism is probably more dangerous than outright pessimism, because the reality is if you're going to build a business, it's freaking tough. You're going to hit barriers left and right. And there's a pragmatism of knowing it, facing it, and working through it that I see sort of a lot of just generically blind entrepreneurs, we would never back. We would never back.
Yeah, there's that fine line between, yeah, optimism and just like, you need to know when you're not hitting the mile markers, you should just drop out of the race.
And look, there are little clues. And I will tell you a little bit of my personal story, because I had my own struggles. I've had a few, fortunately not many, but a few, you know, depressive episodes in my life. And I'll tell you, the first couple years of Zico, probably even before we met, in fact, certainly before we met, when we just launched, it was brutal. I went from a very cush job, making a lot of money, living in Latin America, company paid for the house and school and car and everything, to then running Zico on a shoestring and barely being able to pay our bills every month. But and with two little kids, you know, a wife and two little girls. And there were a lot of days, especially winters in New York, where I'm getting up at 4 a.m. to drive to Long Island to visit our distributor, where I did not want to get out of bed. And I worked really hard on reframing my thinking, learning how to meditate, learning about mantras, learning how to, you know, count my blessings, and how to really develop a positive attitude. And so I can remember literally waking up at 4 a.m., going for a run in ice and snow and sleet, and telling myself, I had a couple little mantras I would use. One was, and this is when we were maybe 200,000 a year in sales, maybe 10 or 20,000 a month. Nobody was buying this stuff. We were giving away more than we were selling. But I'm telling myself, everybody loves Zico. Everybody loves Zico. Everybody loves Zico, right? And then what were some of the other little ones were, I probably have this written down somewhere. I am strong. I am clear. I'll remember it in a second.
Oh, that's so funny.
You know, 45 minutes or an hour or whatever it was, I'd be running, grilling this into my head so I could get into the positive state that I needed to be in, because I knew the day was going to be hell. I'd go to the distributor. I'm going to get beat up. I got to go sell in the streets. I got to pay bills. And I had money coming in, like, it just was brutal.
That is so awesome, though. That is, I think so many people will find that takeaway helpful.
Indeed.
And it's funny, because isn't it, I don't know what it is about all the times of the day, but I always feel like your grit comes out, and maybe this is just because I'm really not a morning person, but at those early dark morning hours when you have to get up at a certain time, then you're like, okay, this is discipline. It's never at 2 p.m. in the afternoon.
Oh,
it's always, and at those god-awful hours, the sacrifices that you make, that's where the sacrifice comes out.
Well, it depends, right? And as you age, you know, that certainly was, I was not a morning person when I started Zico. I promise you, I had to become one. Now I can't help but get up at, you know, 5 a.m. every day at the latest. But my challenge now is actually later in the day. It's that I really want to drink. I really just something in the afternoon. And I realize, yeah, part of it's age, part of just where I am. I cannot afford to drink during the week. I can't.
Not if you're getting up at that time.
Not too.
Not if I'm going to have a conversation with a world-class entrepreneur. That's coming to me, you know, a potential investment I've got to vet, or an entrepreneur has got a big problem, or an investor we're dealing with. Like, I got serious work to do. So my challenge now is actually the end of the day to hold that grit and discipline to get through that.
Oh,
out.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. So one question we like to ask everybody is, who would you thank as somebody who's had a major influence on your career that's outside of your family?
Outside of my family. I'm going to mention someone that wasn't really involved. I wasn't involved with until recently, but it's been an influence from afar in a way.
Yeah.
Paul Hawken, the environmentalist. If you're not familiar with him, look him up. He's just a extraordinary writer and activist in the environmental arena. And I read a number of his books when I was in college. And they set me on this trajectory and forced me to sort of open my mind to understand the way we choose to or not to interact with the natural world, what we've done to the natural, what we can learn from the natural world. And that has really inspired me in so many ways. And I have the great fortune to be able to work with Paul now in a new project he's working on. So it's a life dream for me in many ways.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that. That's why I'm working with Neil. That's very similar. I used to follow his stuff for many years through marketing in business school and beyond and all those books. And this is my manifestation, podcasting.
And now we're amazing. And we both ended up writing books on influence. So.
Yeah, amazing, right?
Amazing.
Hey, Mark, I wanted to sort of bounce off the idea where Amanda was going about those that are optimistic tend to be more successful as entrepreneurs. I'm really curious. And I know that there's probably some listening that maybe haven't found that purpose or that mission, or maybe, you know, they're already in business and they're looking for it or what have you. Was there a trigger point for you? And when you look at all the entrepreneurs that you work with that are, you know, mission driven, is it upbringing? Is it DNA? Is it a trigger point? Is it a culmination of things? And I mean, thinking about Zico back in 1996, I think that, and I'm a Gen Xer, we often associate millennials as those that want to be part of something bigger than them that you talked about. I'm not sure how many people were talking about that, you know, 25 years ago. So you were obviously well ahead of the pack, but I'm just very curious as to your own personal, you know, experience with that mission. Has it changed over time, the trigger and what you see in other successful entrepreneurs you work with?
Yeah, that's a great question, Neil. I mean, you know, the first thing I'd say is I'm amazed every day and just feel so fortunate to be able to connect with these, you know, 1,000+ entrepreneurs we speak with a year, and probably many more of that are outside of our arena. And the most amazing thing is they come in all shapes, sizes, ages, sexual orientation, color, creed, you know, nationality, language, upbringings, you know, financial backgrounds, all over the place, especially today, more than ever today. And I think that what I probably would say that they all have in common is the self-awareness and the ability to look inside. And it reminds me of a Tony Robbins quote from years ago, something like, all you ever need is inside you now, which I'm sure goes back to, you know, in fact, does go back to Buddhism and Sufism and other, you know, ancient writings. It's an inner journey, right? We're all on an inner journey and we're all simultaneously completely interconnected and completely have everything within ourselves. And so I think this is an internal process, and that's certainly what it was for me, of spending the time to reflect, write, think, and listen to who you are, what you want to do with your life, and the time will come, right? Some people, it may be tomorrow. Some people may take a lifetime. We're all on our own time horizon. It's impossible to predict these things. I do believe some of this is, if not all of it, sort of, you know, predestined in a way. So I tend to encourage people, look, you gotta give yourself the time and space to think and feel and find what's in you, and then figure out how to allow that and to come out to the world.
It's quite inspirational advice for the podcast listener. Thank you very much.
And you've got a million other new entrepreneurs that now want to pitch you. So where would you suggest that they go for some, just pitch someone like you or otherwise? Where do they start?
They can all email me directly, mark@powerplantvc.com. We have an amazing system. We have an amazing system where we've got an amazing team that can process through deals very quickly. You know, most likely I will not have a first conversation with somebody. If it fits our sweet spot, somebody on my team would, but if not, at least you get it in front of people, and you got to sometimes get it in front of a lot of different people to find the right match.
Thank you so much for being so generous with your time and so full of really good information. I think we can package this and sell it actually now. Instead, we're going to do, I think maybe podcasts might have more value if we put like 99 cents on an episode.
There you go. Have at it, Amanda and Neil. You know, I'm returning my favors for all the help you did. And I do have something interesting. I think you guys will be curious about this and can be influencers for this thing. I got to keep it on lockdown, but hopefully we'll have some news on it in a week or so. It's pretty interesting.
Oh, excellent. I can't wait. Thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome.
Yep. Thank you, Mark. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.